Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
Got it inside. And five. Touchdown.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joined in studio by my merry band of brothers to the left of me, Ezra Ginsberg. Across the table from me, Michael Remus. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air. And the man known worldwide as Mr. Friday Night, Richard Pollock. Welcome to the program, everybody.
Hey now, Drew.
Hey now. Ezzy?
Drew, it's great to be here. I'm on a drug, and it's called Drew Mandel.
That's a good drug to be on. I look around this table, and there's only one word that comes to mind, and that word is winning. Definitely winning. Boys, Big week in the NHL. We're thrilled to be here from 9 till noon today to recap it. Coming up in about 15 minutes' time from ESPN Chicago, Jesse Rogers is going to be joining us to talk about the Blackhawks. Coming up at 9:45, Tom Gelutti of the Bergen Record in New Jersey to talk about the hottest team in hockey, and that's the New Jersey Devils. I mean, we've had a debate for a number of weeks now whether or not they're going to be able to pull off the comeback, but you know, all they keep doing is winning, so... like Charlie Sheen. 10 o'clock, Gary Lawless of the Winnipeg Free Press and Hustler and Lawless here on Sports Radio 1290 will be joining us. And then for our final guest tonight is going to be our...
tonight? Drew.
This afternoon, this
you
morning.
You been partying all night?
You know, it's the only way I know how to go is hard.
Bender?
Yeah, exactly. Our good friend Ari Baum Cohen, our resident gambling expert, formerly of Covers.com, is going to be joining us to talk about a little bit about the gambling world and how it relates to the NHL now that the trade deadline has passed. And, you know, if you got some money burning in your pocket, who you might throw a couple dollars on to, you know, get some good odds to win the Stanley Cup. But before we get underway with all that, of course, much, much more on this program. We're going to talk also about the high school hockey controversy taking place in Winnipeg. We'll do a segment on that, and we'll want to hear about your opinion on that. Strong opinions from us in this room on that subject, so we want to hear what you have to say on that. But recapping of last night's games in the NHL, and you know what I love right now in the NHL, I mean, the beauty of parity, you know, is that every game seems to matter for playoff positioning, and then the standings are juggling so like crazy, no matter what happens in any given day. Last night, you know, started in New Jersey. Pittsburgh went into Jersey. Jersey beat him in overtime 2-1. All Jersey can do is win. That's the only thing. I mean, if they just keep winning, they might have a chance. They can't afford
winning.
They can't afford any losses at all, pretty much.
Drew, they keep winning, and they are keeping teams to two goals and under. I think now the Devils have kept the opposing team to two goals or under now in 8 consecutive games, 9 consecutive games, something like that. So the Devils are winning, and they're keeping teams at bay. Yesterday's game was an ugly game. It was an ugly
game
to watch.
Every Devils game is an ugly game. Well, I mean, any game coached by Jacques Lemaire is going to be an ugly game.
The Devils right now, their top defenseman is who? Anssi Salmela? I mean, it's ridiculous. So
Isn't that something you get if you eat bad meat?
Man, I'll tell you one thing, though. Jacques Lemaire is the only guy I know who coaches in Minnesota, New Jersey, and keeps a great 10.
Yeah, what is that?
Does that guy fake tans.
Does he? I think he might spray.
You think he's GTL?
Is he
Jim Tan Laundry?
Or is he one of those guys that tans once in his life and he just keeps that tan?
No, he's not one of those guys. But the truth is, guys, I mean, he is a great coach. He's a boring coach, but he's a tremendous coach. Yeah. He revolutionized the game in a sense, you know, for better or worse, probably for worse. But regardless, I mean, he has. And, you know, with this system and you know a lot about a Jacques Lemaire system, it's collapsing in front of your net on defense and offense. It's a center-high system, meaning, you know, that you know, a guy like Mikko Koivu playing the system was maybe offensively successful to a point, but couldn't, you know, start the forecheck, and it was more of a one guy in, and that center's always high. Like, that's the way his system is based upon, not making mistakes and making the other team make mistakes in the neutral zone and in the offensive zone. And then in terms of the defensive zone, his goal is to keep you to the outside, and, you know, luck and bounces will beat you as opposed to making, you know, one-on-one mistakes.
Anybody who can make Mark Fain into a good defenseman obviously is still a very good head coach.
And he did it for many defensemen. You know, ask Willie Mitchell what Jacques Lemaire did for his career.
you know, he all he seems to do is make marginal players that much better.
Right.
So, I mean,
goalies too.
Yeah, absolutely. In Ottawa last night, New York Rangers went into Ottawa on the second night of a back-to-back after losing at home to the Minnesota Wild last night. They beat Ottawa 4-1, a game they had to have. They lost three straight on home ice. So they went on the road and cleared their cobwebs out of their head and won 4-1.
Ottawa's like a bye week, though.
Yeah,
bye
of course.
Bye game.
You know, of course. But, I mean, you still got to go. You still have to go home and go there and take care of business.
Ottawa's like playing the Las Vegas Posse, for those who remember when the CFL had American teams. Remember how bad the Las Vegas Posse were?
All I remember about the Las Vegas Posse is when they tried to sing the Canadian National Anthem there once. I think they sang it to... they sang it to a completely different tune of some other song. It was awful. That's the only thing I remember about the Las Vegas Posse.
No, you have a posse, Drew?
I do have a posse. They're actually out in the hallway, you know.
The Mindell posse.
They're guarding the door, make sure they're, you know. They everywhere I go, actually, they set up a velvet rope to make sure nobody gets that close to me. You know, it's just the way we roll here. In Chicago last night, Chicago 5, Carolina 2. Blackhawks continue to just absolutely be one of the hottest teams in hockey. 8-1-1 in their last 10. We're going to be joined by Jesse Rogers in about 20 minutes' time. He actually just emailed me, said he's running about 10 minutes late. So Jesse Rogers, about 9:25, 9:30 this afternoon or this morning, will join us. He's on his way to Toronto. The Blackhawks play the Leafs tonight at the ACC.
Original six.
Yeah.
The way the Hawks are rolling right now, it's going to be a tough game for Toronto.
They're just playing.
No, Toronto's not rolling, but the talent level, there's a huge discrepancy in talent. And right now, and we're going to ask Jesse Rogers this. I want to ask him this. But right now, we've had this discussion back when we were on KFM. If you have to pick a player right now to build a team around, and Crosby and Ovechkin are off the board.
Yeah. It's
Patrick Kane.
But seriously, it might be. It might be Jonathan Toews.
Well,
it might have to be Jonathan Toews.
Yeah, I mean, he just, yeah.
I think we're still 5 weeks, 6 weeks away from the playoffs, but I think what we're going to see in the playoffs this year is we're going to see a team that has their 1-2 punch. Actually, you could say that they have a 1-2-3-4 punch, that being Chicago with Toews, Hossa, Sharp, and Kane.
Yep.
We're going to see what's going to happen in the playoffs, because if Pittsburgh doesn't have Sidney Crosby back,
playoffs.
They already have Evgeny Malkin out for the season. I think you're going to see a two-horse race. I think it's really going to be probably between Chicago, or pardon me, maybe three-horse race. It's going to be Vancouver, Chicago, Detroit. I don't think...
Well, I wouldn't overlook San Jose right now. San Jose has won 8 games in a row. They're back up to 3rd in the Western Conference now.
And LA. I think it's a 5-team race.
Yeah, I don't put LA up to that standard yet.
5-team race for me.
Okay, that's fine. In Calgary last night, the Flames also continued to roll. They beat Columbus 4-3. Ugly game. Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you win, as long as you win. It's a game they had to win.
Yeah, of course.
Columbus on the second night of a back-to-back.
Mika Kiprusoff stopped 2 penalty shots last night. 2.
Winning.
One on Matt Calvert. And the other one was on...
Well,
How often do you have 2 penalty shots
Columbus
in one game?
I think it was Vermette.
Columbus is the only team I know that has a defensive problem and then trades Kessler.
Trades their top defenseman, you mean?
They have a defensive problem.
Terrible trade.
I mean, it's not arguably...
A pointless trade.
It wasn't their top defenseman, but...
A pointless trade.
And I like Scotty Upshaw, but you're adding offense. You don't have any defensemen. We talked about this on Monday. You don't have any defensemen, and then you're trading defensemen, and then you're expecting to make a run into the playoffs. It just seemed like a completely and totally...
The thing is, Richie, their top defenseman is Fedor Tuten and Anton Strahlman.
Well, call me when the season's over, then.
And on any other team, on a good team like a Vancouver, Tuten's a 5th, 6th defenseman.
This is a joke.
Did you just play a clip of Richard making a comment?
Is that a clip of me?
You can't do clips of... You have to do clips of famous people, not of Richard.
It is a joke, though.
Richie's a good sound clip. Richard's also an actor.
Yeah, I know. I saw his acting chops on the ice on Thursday night or something.
A lot of people don't know that Richie's a silent film star.
Independent
films. It's absurd. That is absurd. Well done, Remus. That is absurd. 100% absurd. Final game last night in Anaheim. The Ducks beat the Stars 4-3. Dallas had a 3-1.
That's a 4-point game.
Oh, well, yeah.
And that's right. I'm going to use the cliche.
Excellent cliche.
The cliche 4-point game.
Dallas had a 3-1 third period lead. They lost 4-3 in the shootout. Lubomir Vyshnovsky with the hat trick for a defenseman last night.
Quietly been very good since being traded to Anaheim.
Yeah.
Has there been a goalie who's gone downhill faster than Kari Lehtinen? I mean, he's been awful in the second half.
He hasn't been bad, has he? You're absolutely right. You know. Can't disagree with you. The numbers caught up with Dallas. But we said that. Well,
You said that.
I believe Ezra said they're going to win the Central Division.
That San Jose would pass Dallas and Chicago would also finish in the top 4. And I famously said both Chicago and San Jose would make the playoffs. Was I wrong again.
Yeah.
You got it, dude.
Is that a Michelle Tanner sound clip?
Remus, how many hours have you spent putting these clips together?
A lot of clips. That's amazing.
So many.
That's awesome.
Right now, Tim is just thinking, only 2 hours and 50 minutes left.
That's good.
By the way, three of those, we were talking about the Hawks before, three of Kane, Taves, and Sharp all in the top 20 in scoring in the National Hockey League.
Sharp's second in the league in goal scoring right now.
Sharp is 33 goals.
Wow.
Yep.
Talk about that
second
under the radar.
Second
illegal
only
curve, two-time illegal curve. Well, one-time illegal curve guest. One time me interviewing him awkwardly in the Chicago Blackhawks dressing room.
And I think a three-time ignorer of my text messages.
Wow, you text?
Well, see if he can get
him.
Text
him and Theo Fleury, Adrian.
Yeah.
Big shot.
Theo responded.
Theo and you are texting.
We're texting buddies.
Yeah.
There you go. Busy day in the NHL today. We'll recap real quick. Jumping out at me. Well, Montreal Tampa's a big game. Vancouver LA this afternoon. That's a terrific
game.
An afternoon game. Vancouver's doing a West Coast trip.
That's as good as you're going to get in terms of an afternoon game.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Rematch of the first round of the Western Conference playoffs last year, and I'll say it again. L.A. was very close to beating Vancouver last year.
A Frolov breakaway goal away from a 3-1 lead going back to Vancouver.
Pittsburgh-Boston tonight, another huge game.
That's a great game.
Chicago-Toronto, we already spoke about that. Yeah. That's a big game. Detroit-Phoenix, there's going to be more. There'll be more Red Wings fans than there will be Coyotes fans.
What's
there.
The late game?
The late game is Edmonton
snoozer.
And Colorado.
The snoozer.
Oh, God.
Which means you can hit the bars a little bit earlier than normal today, Richie.
Yeah, Edmonton, Colorado.
Yeah, that's
mercy.
Yeah, that's
how much Full House do you watch?
Quite a bit.
That's great. No, but
I think we're trying to set a Guinness Book of World
that's
Records.
That's a terrible game. No Taylor Hall to watch. That's not worth watching.
And then the actual game that's
no Theo Peckham to watch either, Richie.
Oh,
he's injured.
Dallas San Jose is the latest game, the last game that hits the ice tonight in San Jose.
San Jose 4, Dallas 1.
Well, it's Dallas on the second half of back-to-back, and San Jose is simply just rolling lately. They've got all machinery clicking. Guys, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to switch things around. We'll talk about some of the signings in the NHL, and we still have Jesse Rogers going to be joining us in about a segment or two.
Mr. Rogers' neighborhood?
Exactly.
Is he going to be wearing a cardigan?
I don't know. You usually wear a cardigan, though.
I'm into cardigans these days.
Yeah, you're very much a cardigan guy. Okay, let's go to break.
What about
you're listening
the band
to
the cardigans?
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:15 in the morning now. It's time to go to the Illegal Curve Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Jesse Rogers of ESPN Chicago, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Got him on the line? Can't hear him.
Jesse?
I'm here, guys.
Oh, hey, how you going? How you doing, Jesse?
All right.
Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, now.
No problem. What's going on?
Not too much. You're on the way to Toronto for the big Leafs-Blackhawks game tonight. We appreciate you giving of your time.
Sure, no problem. What's on your mind?
Well, let's start with the contract signing of Brent Seabrook from last week. 5-year contract extension worth $29 million. Do you think General Manager Stan Bowman has committed too much money to his top four defensemen?
Well, not necessarily. They believe that that's where this whole thing starts for this team, and they've decided to invest there instead of some other areas, let's say in goalie, for example, in terms of the big money. I'm not going to say it's the best idea. I'm not going to say it's the worst. I think the jury is still out. It is, I think, the most in the NHL moving forward in terms of their top four defensemen. But every team is different. I'm going to hold judgment. I will say I think they got a little messed up with this Nicholas Jarmolson deal last year.
Yeah, sure.
He's overpaid in terms of the marketplace concern. But I think Seabrook and these other guys are getting what the marketplace dictates. Now, Campbell, that goes back a couple years. That's even predates Bowman really as GM, so that's a little different. But I think the Seabrook deal makes sense. Could it have been a little bit longer for less money and reduce the cap? Well, there's a million ways to go about this thing, but we don't know all the details and why they did things. But Stan seems to think that he has a good handling of the salary cap going forward. So I don't have a big problem with the top four making what they're making. Though, like anyone else, I think, Brian Campbell and Nicholas Jarmolson's deals are a little bit larger than they should be.
Sure. Jesse, the Hawks have turned it up lately, obviously. 8-1-1 in their last 10, and they look like a force right now. I don't think anybody wants to play this team, and they've already, they cruised up to fourth in the standings, and, only 3 points out of ninth, mind you, but, 7 points behind the Red Wings, and look like they're on a mission right now. What's been the biggest key to the change?
Well, I wish I could give you some great coaches, X's and O's thing, but I think it's just this sense of urgency. I think they finally just decided we really, really have to play. And they said those things in December and January, but they rang a little hollow. Now was the time they had to play. they even understood that they couldn't even wait till late March, because if you wait till late March, you can still get in, but you could also expend every ounce of energy getting in, and then you got nothing left. Although we've seen teams like Philadelphia last year go to the finals, but that's not the formula you want to have.
Right.
You want to establish yourself. I don't want to say put it on cruise control, but just, you know, not have to have that mental pressure in early April and late March. So they even knew exactly when they needed to do it to get into the right position here where they can, you know, I still think there's going to be a lull. They're going to lose some games here in March, but at least it's not devastating, where 2 weeks ago, if they had continued on in a 4 or 5 game losing streak, they would have really been buried and had to climb out of it. So I think they just sensed the urgency of it all and picked up their game. That's as much as the players have told me, at least.
Jesse, we wanted to quickly talk to you about goaltending. You know, me and Drew, over the last several years, we've argued about Marty Turco, and, you know, I thought, you know, he had a chance to, you know, have a bounce back year in Chicago, but obviously he hasn't played very well in Chicago, and Corey Crawford is now the number one goaltender. Are the Hawks confident with the two goalies they now have?
Well, they're certainly confident in the guy that's playing, and that's Corey Crawford. I don't know, and they'll never say it, but I don't believe they have a ton of confidence in Marty Turco. Hence the fact that he's not playing much. I was pretty much told that, you know, that Dallas game where he came back, you know, to Dallas for the first time, that was going to be his, you know, basically last hurrah. He was going to play in that game, and then it was only if Corey was tired or only if they had a little losing streak and they wanted to go the other way. It was never going to be a scheduled situation. I don't think he starts tonight, not after 7 in a row with the other guy in net. So they're down to basically Crawford, and, you know, it's a lot to put on them, but they were down to Antti Niemi last year, and they did pretty good. And last year's defense was better. Mm-hmm. This year's defense is getting better. So I don't think they have a big issue with Crawford, but it is a little shaky anytime you have a rookie going into the NHL playoffs.
We're joined on the line by Jesse Rogers of ESPNChicago.com. Jesse, you know, you look at the landscape of the NHL and the PR, you know, decision makers in the NHL decide it's Ovechkin and Crosby all the time. Now, of course, they're both on the, you know, Crosby's has been out for a while. Ovechkin's having a down year. What's it going to take for Jonathan Toews to really get the attention, the national attention that he deserves, given how he really has become, you know, in the conversation for one of the top players in the league?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, there was a dynamic part of Ovechkin that made him, a charismatic sort of guy on and off the ice. When you're scoring goals the way he did or does, there's a reason that, you know, he is where he is in terms of the media. Crosby was just so good, you can't ignore him. And, you know, East Coast, obviously, as well. But when you're that good, scoring titles, MVPs, you're gonna get recognized. What comes first, the attention or the play? It's the play. I mean, let's you know, Crosby doesn't get this attention if he's not a great player. Same with Ovechkin. Toews is getting there. Now, he's not flashy. That's what Ovechkin is. He hasn't led the league in scoring. That's what Crosby's done. So, listen, there's nothing wrong with Toews' game, but if you're talking about the marketing media aspect, you do need some flash and dash. You do need to have 100-plus points, and that's what it might take. Now, he's playing so well, and there's a little bit of an MVP vacuum. He might win the award, and that sort of will get him the media attention. But if he doesn't, what he needs is a 50-goal season, a 100-point season, that sort of thing. That's just the way it works. You know, being the captain of a Stanley Cup championship team is great, but Ovechkin still goes between his legs and puts it, you know, through three guys and scores, and that's even better in terms of the highlights. So, you know, nobody cares about that in Chicago. They just want to win. But if you're asking me media-wise, marketing-wise, he needs to be either flashy or lead the league in scoring or do something like that.
Jesse, in terms of Chicago, I mean, we're from afar. Obviously, you know, Toews being a Winnipegger, we know a fair amount about him. But in terms of Chicago and the superstar landscape, I mean, the Cubs and the White Sox, for the most part, lack for that star power. Even the Bears, you could argue, you know, don't necessarily have that guy that the city is in love with. The Bulls, maybe another story. Is Toews the number one star in town, or is he behind the likes of Derek Rose and Brian Urlacher? Where does he fit amongst the...
Yeah, unfortunately, hockey, you know, this isn't Winnipeg. Yeah. Unfortunately, even with the Stanley Cup, hockey is still somewhere down 3, 4, 5 in town. And, there's no doubt Derek Rose is already ahead of him. That's just the nature of basketball. And Toews also splits the vote a little bit. You know, people love Patrick Kane and his sort of way about him, just because he's fun and everything. Not everybody likes it, but, you know, so there's a bunch of stars on this team, so he splits the vote. But he has the ultimate respect of this town. That is absolutely for sure. He is certainly in that team photo of stars, but I don't think he's bigger than Derrick Rose or any really major Bear, from Cutler to Brian Urlacher. But he certainly is right there. I mean, it's 1, 1A, 1B type of thing when you talk about stars in this town. Now, if he and Derrick Rose win the MVP in the same year, that sort of puts him on the same plateau in a sense because it's, you know, not many cities have done it. So
right.
He'll be vaulted into that other world with basketball and transcend hockey because only LA has had a two-time MVP in the same season with Magic Johnson and Wayne Gretzky. So it'll actually be good for him if he wins the MVP and Derrick Rose wins the MVP because they'll always be tied.
That's an interesting tidbit right there. Yeah, Jesse. In terms of a trade that in this room we all really liked for Chicago, and that was Michael Frolik. Now he's taken a little while to get going in Chicago, but can you talk about what the general manager Stan Bowman sees in him and how Joel Quenneville has seen his kind of game come along since coming into the lineup?
Yeah, I think there's some speed and quickness and some skill there, probably more than we saw out of Jack Skilly, who was more of an up and down player.
Yep.
Miscast as a fourth line player, probably Skilly at that point. And Frolik, he has what you would expect out of a two-time 21-goal scorer. I think that Dale Talon, probably the guy in Florida, thought, you know what, I drafted Skilly. They're not getting the most out of him. I can get the most out of him. Frolik was having a down year. So I think change of scenery for both may have been in order. But I don't think that if you put him up, against scouts in the league, they would say Skilly has more talent than Frolik. I think Frolik would win out.
Mm-hmm.
And now that he's playing with more talent and less pressure on him, in some sense, obviously bigger in market, important market here, but he's not the man. He doesn't have to score 21 on this team. I think you're seeing him play more relaxed. He played the first few games with Hossa, wasn't very good. Then he drops down to a third line, less pressure, less attention. He's played pretty well, had a three-point night a couple games ago.
Jesse, tell us why you think the Chicago Blackhawks will repeat as Stanley Cup champions, or conversely, tell us why Chicago won't repeat as Stanley Cup champions.
Okay, why they will? The Stars are starting to play like the Stars. The fatigue seems to be over. The urgency of the games matter, and these guys are very good, and it's a large star core. That's why there's all this money tied up. Seabrook, Keith, Jarmelson, Campbell, Taves, Kane, Sharp, Hossa, Boland. I mean, that's a huge core. I mean, some teams have three guys. This team has five, six, seven guys. So they're starting to play like it. So, and I don't think the third and fourth line guys that replaced the Bufflins and Versteeg have played poorly. They've been pretty decent all year. So they just have to play the same. The Stars have to play like their Stars and like their contracts say, and I think they can do it. Now, that is if Crawford can repeat what Antti Niemi did, which right now I don't see why he can't. So I will say that's the reasons why they can't do it. Is because when you get to, let's say, late May in the third round, maybe that fatigue does start to take over,
mm-hmm.
and the short summer does happen, starts to take effect. And Keith and Seabrook in particular wear down as they were at the beginning of this season. So how long does that second win last? Can it last all the way to mid-June? I don't know. But I think that, the pressures of 2 months and the fatigue of 2 months could catch up with them, especially with a little less depth compared to last year.
Jesse Rogers of ESPNChicago.com, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, guys. Have a great day. Have a great show.
Take care, Jesse. Thanks very much.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Well, that was tremendously insightful.
His nails.
Well, if Vancouver is the favorite, right, which they are,
yeah,
Chicago still has their number in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Well, until Vancouver beats them, they still have their number.
Exactly. Jesse makes a great point before we go to break. Jesse makes a great point in that, they might wear down by the third round. That's a concern. But what about those first two?
Yeah. I mean,
anybody's game.
I don't see Chicago.
It depends on matchups.
Yeah.
That's the game these days.
I mean, it depends. Absolutely. I mean, if the playoffs were to start today,
they play the 4-5
game. They're playing Calgary.
I still
anybody
think they're
think
the team you don't
want
to play.
Calgary?
No, there's no
I still think they're the team you don't want to play in the playoffs. I really do.
Well, I wouldn't want
to. It's Vancouver and Chicago.
Look at the names he just rattled off there.
Yep.
Taves, Sharp, Keith, Boland, Chalmerson, Campbell, Seabrook. He went eight deep of top flight NHLers.
It's still you could still argue it's the best defense, but it's still ahead of Detroit and maybe only behind Vancouver.
I think they're ahead of Vancouver.
No, I think
they're
the best.
Ahead of Vancouver. They're arguably ahead of Detroit. They're close there. There's teams like LA as you have to be considered in there as well.
Let's go to break, guys. When we come back, we're going to talk about some signings around the NHL. We'll see if we can take some of your calls. Lots more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I like that. Some
punchy, exciting music gets a good
For once, I'm going to be the one that puts you on the spot. Usually Richie puts you on the spot. What band is that?
I have no idea. That's not putting me on the spot. That's like asking me the square root of a million.
I don't know what band that is.
No.
Oh, hold on. This is Aerosmith, isn't it?
No, hold on.
Really?
It's BTO.
No, it's Aerosmith.
This is Aerosmith?
I say Aerosmith, and Eddie gives me a look as if I'm wrong, and then Remus gives me the confirmation.
There's a reason why Richard's Mr. Friday Night, and that's so that he can name things like that. He can drop that.
Richie's got his Black Keys and U2 tickets.
I have both tickets, yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Anyways,
Richie's on the scene, Drew. You got to know that by now.
I'm well aware that he's on the scene, and I'll tell you what, I've never been so happy to not be on any scene near that guy.
Hey now, Drew.
Hey now. Hey now. Anyways, we just heard from Jesse Rogers of ESPN Chicago, and now we're going to... There's a lot of signings, you know, in addition to all the trades that happened on Monday, and of course, if you missed any of our five-hour trade deadline special, you can go back and catch it on iTunes. You know, it's available there for download. Just search Illegal Curve on iTunes, and while you're at it, you might as well follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, and follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, where everywhere you want to be. Anyways, lots of signings in the NHL this past week as well. The start in San Jose, where the Sharks re-signed goaltender, we just talked about him with Jesse Rogers, goaltender Antti Niemi, to a four-year contract with an average annual value of $3.8 million per year.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Cash register certainly did ring up there for Antti Niemi. Boys, has he justified being a $4 million a year goaltender?
I think based on his age and the way he's played in the last 2 months, maybe 2.5 months approximately, I think he started 18 games in a row. I mean, I'm not the resident capologist here, but it sounds about right. It doesn't sound too high. I mean, if Halak got around $3.5-4 million, I think, you know, that's the same ballpark. So to me, it seems kind of like market value for what Niemi's given them.
What jumps out to me here is, I mean, he got his arbitration.
This is a terrible contract.
Really?
See, there's Richie Wins.
It's a terrible contract.
It's an awful contract. It doesn't it's completely and totally against what San Jose is subscribed to, at least heading into the season. Giving Antti Niemi a four-year contract at $3.8 million. The term is bad. The annual salary is bad. I mean, this is a terrible contract.
Here's the reason
from a guy who's very astute. It's very odd, very, very surprising to me.
Here's the reason why I don't think it's so bad. If he was playing, I mean, he's not playing in front of behind a stellar defense in San Jose. It's not like
not
he
a
was
bad defense.
Well, but they're not anything to write home about. It's not like when he was on Chicago last year and his defense was exceptional, so you never really knew how good or bad he actually was. Playing on an average defense in San Jose.
Hold on. You're talking about two teams, Drew, that completely, totally dominate the puck possession and against the opposition. They dominate the puck possession, and generally they're playing, I would assume, I haven't checked into this, but generally I'm assuming that most of the games that these guys play are with the leader tied.
I'm not disputing that, but I don't
so
think
which
it's
means
that.
If you're playing with the lead, you mean to get a lot more shots against. That's what statistically the teams that are trailing shoot more,
right.
And they only shoot from everywhere.
Right. So you think his numbers are skewed?
I think that.
He's at a .920 save percentage.
This year.
In
how many games?
Well, 40. 41 games.
So I'm going to judge a goaltender on 40 games?
Well, you can judge him based on what he did last year in the playoffs as well, if you want.
And what was his save percentage last year?
Well, it was lower than that, I suspect. I'd have to check.
912 last year.
Well, okay. So, I mean, I don't think that this is so bad. You're not... That
why would you
isn't
give
going to change very much in the next 4 years.
Okay, conversely, okay. Yeah, why don't we look at the Jimmy Howard contract?
Well, okay, then that's a fair segue. Let's go to the Jimmy Howard contract. Jimmy Howard re-signed with the Detroit Red Wings. Two-year contract extension, $2.25 million per year.
Now, that's a good GM right there.
Winning.
That's a good sign.
That's a better defense. Jimmy Howard plays in front of a better plays with a better defense in front of him than Antti Niemi does.
I want to step in.
I think if you put Jimmy Howard on the San Jose Sharks, then San Jose is
Jimmy
in a lot
Howard's
more trouble.
Played 121 career games. Antti Niemi has played 86 career games, regular season, okay?
Right.
Antti Niemi's save percentage over his career so far in 86 games is .915. And Jimmy Howard over 112 games, just pulling it up. There we go. Is .916.
I'm saying if you replace those, if you swap
so
out
915 and 916. Okay, you're not even talking about even string save percentage, which is more predictive. You're talking about overall. Okay. And now Niemi is how old, Drew? Niemi is
27.
How old's Howard?
Howard is
26.
Same age. Yeah.
Is he the same age?
26.
Roughly the same age.
Okay.
I mean, he seems like he's been around forever. Yeah, he's
right.
26
Niemi
also.
Niemi is...
It's only his second year as a starter in Detroit.
Yeah. He seems like he's been around forever, though. But go on. What's your point?
Well, you're paying Howard $2.25 a year?
Yeah.
And you're paying Niemi $3.8. And you're paying Niemi two more years. Am I the only one who thinks that's absurd?
From an analytical point of view, Richie makes a good point
in
the sense that...
I think if you put Jimmy Howard on San Jose, if you put Jimmy Howard on San Jose, I think he struggles. I don't think he's a good enough goaltender in front of it with a mediocre...
Totally disagree.
An average defense in front of him.
Totally disagree.
Okay, I mean, you're entitled to disagree with me. It's you're allowed to do it once per show. This is the one time per show. That's the quota, once per show. But, I just think that, you look at San Jose, I think what he's doing is he's keeping that core together. And I think Antti Niemi has proven that he can do it in the playoffs, which is what Evgeny Nabokov could never do.
Once.
Well, once, and he's doing it in the regular season this year as well. So, I think that I don't mind the signing. I thought it might be a little bit on the high side, but I don't think it's outrageously on the high side.
You're talking about Niemi,
right?
What
do you need to sign a goalie for 4 years for?
What? You keep your core together. You give them confidence. You don't have to worry about anything else. You know who your goalie is going to be for
the
next 4 years.
What about signing Thomas Vokoun this offseason? If you're going to give $3.8 million to a goalie.
You can't get Thomas Vokoun.
I realize that, but if you're going to give $3.8 million to Antti Niemi, I'm sure you could splurge for the $5.5 million it's going to cost you for Thomas Vokoun.
Well, you're in love with Thomas Vokoun, so I don't think you're...
Halleck makes 3.75 cap hit a year. You're paying more than Halleck. But, you look at Halleck's numbers, Jimmy. You look at the Howard contract, you look at Niemi, I find them to be very comparable. They've played a similar amount of games for the most part. They have similar save percentages, and they're approximately 1 year apart, and they both play on good puck control teams.
Yeah, but
why would you give him, 1.55 more?
Yeah. I think that Jimmy Howard on San Jose is not an answer, whereas Antti Niemi on San Jose with that defense in front of him could do a pretty good job.
He was so good, Drew.
Yeah.
Why didn't Chicago just find the cap room to keep him?
Because they had made a previous cap. They had the cap problems.
But if he was so good,
right?
Remus, ring the bell. Hold on. I think that the Antti Niemi signing and the Yaroslav Halak signing are both victims of the one-hit wonder syndrome. I think when Richard makes the point that Antti Niemi has only basically shown San Jose 40 games and has only shown Chicago 26 games, maybe he doesn't deserve a four-year contract. He has been hot lately, but at the beginning of the year, Niemi was awful. I just think, when I look at the contract and I see $4 million, okay, the reason why I don't think that that's bad is because you have J.S. Jaguar making $6 million.
Wow, that was a
and San Jose had Nabokov at $6 million, and he was awful last year in the playoffs. So $4 million compared to Jimmy Howard, and then the numbers when you compare those two, it looks a little bit high. But when you look at the goalies in the last let's say 10 years or so, and how many Rick DiPietro's making $4 or $5 million a year. I mean, there's so many goalies that are overpaid.
Niemi's $2 million he's earning this year. He was awarded 2.75 in salary arbitration, to be fair. But even so, 2.75, you couldn't find a way to make it happen? I mean, you could find... Drew, there's always a way to find... there's always a way to make something work if you wanted to in a cap system. So, but it's what's it worth to me? Is he that good of a goaltender that we can't lose him? Clearly, the talent evaluators in Chicago, who've seen him more than anybody, thought otherwise.
I think the talent evaluators in Chicago said, we have probably one of the best defenses in the league, and we can put a... We don't have to pay $2.75 million to our goalie. We can get an average goaltender and pay him, next to nothing, which is what they're paying Corey Crawford. And we're going to be fine. Whereas San Jose with an average defense said we need a better goaltender to compensate for our average defense. That's how I view it from San Jose's perspective.
I think I view it as general managers love to pay mediocre goalies too much money.
I think Yezzy's exactly right there.
Okay.
And I think that based on that, That's why I think I'm right, and I think Richard's right. I think they paid Niemi.
Sounds like the only one who isn't right is me.
No, you're right too.
No, I can be wrong.
Niemi got too many years and a little bit too much money, but I think there's a precedent where a lot of mediocre goalies are getting too much money.
Okay, that's fair. Let's move to another contract, and I think we're unanimous in this one in saying that this is a contract that baffles our minds. This is the four-year, $14.6 million deal the Kings forward Justin Williams got.
I'll jump in here because Richie knows that I like Justin Williams, and Richie actually has been a fan of Justin Williams. Yeah. This is too much money, though, and I think Richie...
It's too much money for a guy who's never proven that he can stay healthy.
He's been great this year, but exactly, when you factor in the health and the timing of it, I think... Good for Justin Williams. Hey, he got a lot of money at a point in his career where, he definitely struck while the iron was hot, so to speak.
Well, he's been healthy this year.
The price is wrong.
He's been healthy this year. He's got 49 points in 62 games this year. So, I mean, it's been one of his healthier years in that he's actually been able to play most of the game.
When healthy, Drew, I mean, you could argue that Justin Williams, it could be worth this. I mean, he's got good hands. He's a very hard worker. He was really good along the boards. Again, working towards strengths of the LA team, controlling the boards, controlling the puck down low, working hard, you know, using your body position, all those things. But he's had so many injuries. You give an injured guy like this a 4-year contract, and I don't mean, I respect Justin Williams' game. I like his game. The guy has, you know, won in Carolina. He's a good player. But $3.5 million, you know, $3.65 million a year moving forward as a cap hit, to me, as a 28-year-old guy who's had so many injury problems, it seems like a risk. Why wouldn't you sign him to a 2 or 3-year deal?
Agreed with you on that one. There's just too much risk involved here that you have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, you know, he's just had a career that's never been able to get off the way it should be just simply because of his injuries.
And the truth is the guys they have signed long-term are Kopitar, you know, past next season, Kopitar, Dustin Brown, totally fine with that. Both of those, Brown's 25, Kopitar's 22, both studs, you know, and then you have, you're going to be eventually signing, obviously, Drew Doughty, and then you sign Jack Johnson. So your core is great. Your core looks good. I know they have Matt Green under a long-term deal, but, I mean, your core is good. It just seems like it's a weird guy to sign within your core.
There's too much money there as far as I'm concerned. Another signing, also sort of puzzling, Mark Stewart signing a 3-year contract worth $5.1 million in Atlanta.
You're paying $1.5 million for a good fighter, pretty much.
Well, no, you're paying more money into a defense that already has a lot of money paid into it, and we talked about this on Monday. You look at this defense, I mean, defense hasn't been great, but there is talent there, and you're talking about Ron Hainsey, Tobias Enstrom, Johnny Oduya, Buffon, Bogosian. Look at the cap hits of all those guys, and then why are you signing Stewart to that deal?
What's going on here?
Yeah, as Mr. Belding was saying there. You know, cap hit for Hainsey, 4.5. Enstrom, 3.75.
Wow.
Oduya, 3.5, right? Buffon, 3, moving to 5.2 next year, and then Bogosian, with all bonuses and such, 2.7. I mean,
Ron Hainsey's got some offensive skill, but how did Ron Hainsey ever get a $4.5 million
terrible contract.
A year contract?
I assume blackmail?
Wow.
Would that be the only blackmail?
That's almost making as much as Martin Brodeur. Martin Brodeur makes $5 million a year.
I missed that clip. What was that?
Billy Madison.
I think I should become a player agent. Wow.
You should become a player agent? I agree.
For the commission.
Well, 6%.
Or just the commission, as he...
By the way, Tim is now coming into the studio with a tray full of, hopefully, gin and tonics.
Drew, are you serving right now, Drew?
I'm not serving. I'm just making sure there's no spilling.
Spillage?
I've seen your serving skills there, Richard. You got a little bit of the shaky wrist going on when you sometimes try and serve a number.
Richie's got a water. We need to clear our throats here. We're getting intense. I got a big mug here.
Getting excitement. You guys are yelling at me. You're getting so excited. You know, that's what happens here, is that a final contract will go through. Chris Phillips re-signing with the Ottawa Senators, 3 years, $9.25 million. Bit of a pay cut current contract.
Fine with the deal, Drew.
He was insisting.
Them keeping him is another story. I don't have a problem with him. He's a pillar in the community, in the organization. Still a defenseman who plays against really good players. He's it's not a ton of money here. I have no issues with this.
No, it's a guy who wanted to stay in Ottawa. He said, look, I know we're rebuilding. I'm not going to make a fuss about it. You know, a year from down the line from now when we lose, you know, when we're the worst team in the NHL next year or something, I want to be in this community. And, you know, I can respect that. That's where he wants to be.
And it's obviously, guys...
One of the good soldiers.
He has to be there because all of their defensemen are young, and there has to be a guy that actually has had some experience in the National Hockey League.
Him and Gonchar.
Aside from Gonchar and Kuba.
And Kuba's in the UFA.
They're going to go with all rookies. Carlson and all these guys. Jared Cowan.
That's right. He's got 1 year left on that deal.
Yeah, you're right. Jared Cowan, Eric Carlson.
You got to have... Yeah. I mean, you know, Gonchar... I think Phillips is more of a mentor than Gonchar, but both of those guys have been around for a long time. It's good signing.
Exactly. Guys, let's go to break. When we come back from the Bergen Record in New Jersey, Tom Galluti, beat writer for the New Jersey Devils. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. 9:45 in the morning. Great song. Sopranos theme song. You know what I hate? The A&E Sopranos. Or edited.
Yeah, the edited's terrible.
Yeah, you can't watch it when it's edited.
The greatest show of all time from the greatest state in the United States with the greatest hockey team.
Oh, you're just getting nicely done. You're just sucking up to New Jersey there.
Three-time Stanley Cup champions, baby.
Let's go to the Illegal Curve offline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Tom Giulitti of the Bergen Record, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us, Tom. Tom, let's start with Zach Parise. He's been out since November. He had to undergo his major surgery to repair a torn meniscus in his left knee. He skated yesterday for the first time. Is there a chance that we see Parise back in the lineup this year?
It's unclear. That's what he's hoping. I would say it's probably going to be only not more than a handful of games. He just started skating on Thursday, so it's been like a slow start. He's not allowed to do anything like quick stops, starts, or pivoting. So it's building up the leg strength until he's ready to do more. Lou Lamoriello said Wednesday that it's at least two or three weeks of him just skating by himself before they even think about him in a practice, and it could be more than that. So it's kind of unknown, but I would be surprised if it's more than maybe definitely be less than 10 games. I would be surprised if it's more than five.
Tom, this team has been on an absolute roll since Jacques Lemaire took over. It took a little bit, of course, off the top, but since Lemaire's really settled in, this team has been a completely different squad. What's been the biggest key for Lemaire in terms of turning this team's fortunes around?
It's definitely been the way he's had them playing in their own zone, their defensive coverage with the and their breakout out of the zone. Just the way they met players constantly are talking about the playing as a five-man unit. The forwards come back and definitely help out the D, which their puck-moving skill is still a weakness. And last night, Pittsburgh did a pretty good job of pressuring them into some turnovers, but the Devils were good at covering up. Mark Berger did it. Good job in net out, as he has been doing lately, as all their goaltending has been doing lately. And they just do a good job of making it a much shorter and easier passes coming out of the zone. That takes a lot of pressure off. And like a lot of teams, they want to play in the other team's zone and stay out of their own, keep you from pressuring them down low on
defense. Tom, I mean, the question has to be asked, I guess. I mean, this team has absolutely been rolling. I think they're 9 points out of a playoff spot now. But did Lou Lamoriello wait too long to fire John McClain?
Well, it seems like that. The answer is yes. The thing is, you never know how things are going to work. This team, if they had changed coaches earlier or if Jacques Lemaire was there at the beginning of the season, you don't know what would have happened. Things didn't really go that well at the end of the second half of last season when Jacques Lemaire was the head coach.
Right.
I think the circumstances were that, they hit rock bottom. They were willing to listen to whatever the head coach got to say. It was so bad, certain players were willing to make sacrifices. Look, Ilya Kovalchuk has become a much better defensive, more responsible player in his own zone than he was in the first half. And, he loves playing for Jacques Lemaire. I think that has a lot to do with it also. Respects Jacques. But a lot of guys have made a commitment that they weren't making earlier in the season. And I think the circumstances are right for them to listen to whatever Jacques had to say, whereas last season, he would often say, I tell them to do certain things, and they don't do them. So maybe if he changed coaches 2 weeks earlier, it would have been the same. I don't know. I think everything kind of fell into place where it was no place to go but up, and now they've got so much confidence where they had no confidence in the first half that it seems to just have snowballed in every game. They're in every game, and then they find a way to win almost every game.
We're joined by Tom Giulitti of the Bergen Record, and Tom has been nice enough to join us as he drives in his car to a New Jersey Devils practice. Earlier this week, prior to the NHL trade deadline, the Devils shipped Jason Arnott, who's a pending UFA, to the Washington Capitals for a second-round pick, and David Steckel. What do you think David Steckel brings to New Jersey, and do you think he's part of Lou Lamoriello's plan for the future?
Well, they've got two more years in his contract after this season, so that must have been something they considered before they made the trade. I think he's a third line, fourth line center type of guy who can do some good things for them in the defensive zone and wins. He's great on faceoffs, and that's always an asset. In the defensive zone, sometimes even the offensive zone. I know the Capitals weren't nearly using him as much. I think he was playing less than 12 minutes a game. But he's been playing them around 15 the first two with the Devils. Jacques Lemaire thought he played better last night than he did in his first game against Tampa on Wednesday. So he admitted he was nervous for that game. So it'll be interesting to see what he develops into. He really hasn't been much more than a fourth line player. So I don't know. He could be in that role of maybe they when they want to use a checking line instead of playing top line against top line, they could do that with him.
Tom, any discussion about the Devils' resurgence, for lack of a better word, during this sort of second half of the season has to begin, well, first with Jacques Lemaire, and then secondly with Ilya Kovalchuk, who has just been dynamite in the last, you know, 3 weeks to a month. What has changed with Kovalchuk's game to really make him be the sort of the elite goal scorer that so many expected him to be all season long?
Well, it's weird. Like, you ask him, and it starts with him, you know, and the coach, starts with him being more responsible defensively, and that instead of cheating and trying to get those chances, he's taking care of his own end first, and things are coming to him and the other end as a result, you know. And he clearly has more confidence. This is a player, you know, he had a shootout attempt against Buffalo back in November where the puck just rolled off his stick and he didn't get a shot off. I mean, it's a completely different player when you watch him as far as his confidence. You know, another thing is that, you know, occasionally you'll see him still do it, but he's not trying to do everything by himself anymore. He was trying to beat everyone, you know, 1-on-4, 1-on-5 sometimes, carrying the puck through. And teams knew what he was going to do with the puck every time because he wasn't passing it, and he repeatedly turned the puck over at the other team's blue line. Now he's using his line mates more, and I think that helps as well.
Tom, if you looked at the Devils' roster quickly, you wouldn't maybe think that this would be the guy that's leading the team in plus-minus, but Nick Palmieri is actually leading the Devils in plus-minus at +10. How big of a surprise has Nick Palmieri been this year? I mean, he's only played about 25 games. He picked up an assist yesterday. He's now playing with Ilya Kovalchuk. What can you tell us about a guy that not a lot of people know about?
Yeah, he's been a surprise. They called him up right before New Year's, actually, and he wasn't even going to play a game. And Brian Rolston, you know, he was called up, I think, basically because Brian Rolston was on reentry waivers, and if he was claimed, he was going to, you know, take his spot on the roster. And then Brian was not claimed, and they told us he was being sent down, and then he wasn't sent down. They kept him up for a game, I think in Carolina on New Year's Day, and even though they lost, he played pretty well, I guess, and they put him right away with Kovalchuk and Travis Ajak. He just seems to have provided, he's a big kid, he can go in the corners, he skates pretty well, he's just provided a little bit of that what they need on that line as far as the guy digging in the corners. He's fit pretty well with Ilya and Travis, and he showed a little bit of a knack around the net. You know, he scored, his goals have not like been end-to-end rushes or anything like that. He just, you know, finds himself in the right place at the right time a lot in front of the net, and he seems to have fit very well with Dejak and Kovalchuk.
Tom, do you think there's any chance that the Devils will pick up these 9 or 10 points and make the playoffs?
It's going to be tough. They keep winning, so that's helping. But I think they're basically in the same place. After they beat Carolina 2 weeks ago, they were 10 points out of a playoff spot, and now they're 9 points out of a playoff spot. So they made up 1 point in the last 2 weeks with only losing one game. It's tough this time of year to gain points. It's 3-point games. So it's going to be difficult. The way they've been, if they keep winning like this, they're going to reach a certain number of points, and maybe it won't matter what everybody else is doing. But you wouldn't have anticipated they would be doing this well. So I guess you can't rule it out that they'll continue this through the end of the season. Who would have thought they'd be 19-2-2?
Exactly. highly improbable, but if they did it, it would be remarkable. It's going to be tough, though.
I agree.
Tom Giulitti of the Bergen Record, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, thanks for having me on, guys.
Take care, Tom. Thanks very much.
Well, Tom is in his car, obviously.
Yes, as he.
As I mentioned before, and, you know, he emailed me late last night after they beat Pittsburgh to tell me that he wasn't going to make, originally we were going to have him on at 11:30, but I've emailed him so many times, and it's great that he finally came on. He's, for everyone, especially Devils fans out there, check out his blog on the Bergen Record. Me and Richie were talking about it today. He blogs every two hours.
Fire and Ice is the name
of the blog. If you're a Devils fan, that's probably the best website out there for you.
It is. No, it's as good as you can get for Devils blog. Tom does a terrific job.
Yeah.
When we did Illegal Curve of the website, we were linking to that daily.
Yeah.
He does really good work. He's candid. is up front. The Devils are an interesting story, and they always seem to be.
Well,
Lou's always got his fingers in.
What happens when Jacques Lemaire can't coach them anymore?
We didn't ask him about that, but Jacques Lemaire might come back next year. Probably won't happen, but he said that he might come back next year.
He said he won't, but I bet you he does.
If they don't hire him, they'll have to hire somebody else, fire that guy.
Well, Adam Oates isn't ready to take over that team. Larry Robinson isn't taking over that team.
Every single guy, they say,
Larry's
ready to take him.
Larry's a great coach.
He wants to be assistant, though, Richie. He likes being an assistant.
Well,
just like me on our Tuxedo Lightning team. You're the head coach, Richie. I'm the assistant. I like my role as assistant.
You were going to say you like being an assistant on
the
show.
I handle the gates. I handle the defensive duties. That's all I need.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the first hour, we were joined by Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago and Tom Giulitti of the Bergen Record. Of course, the show will be available on iTunes later on this afternoon, so you can always download it in case you missed any of it.
Great interviews so far. Two terrific interviews.
I agree.
I can't argue with you. You're very excited.
Fantastic interviews.
I like the excitement you're bringing.
Ridiculous interviews.
The hottest teams in hockey, the Devils and then the Hawks.
That's right. So,
unfortunately, only one of those teams is probably going to go to the playoffs. But
you can find the show on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can get it automatically downloaded onto your computer. While you're at it, you might as well add us on Twitter if you haven't yet.
Yeah.
At Illegal Curve on Twitter. And on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Gary Lawless is on his way, going to be joining us in studio and coming up in about 15 or 20 minutes' time. In the interim, though, a very interesting story developed in, of all things, Winnipeg minor high school hockey.
Yep.
I'm sure you've probably seen it in the cover of the Free Press and everywhere else.
Yep.
The coaches for here's the quick synopsis of the story. Westwood was playing Collège Jean Sauvé.
In the Winnipeg High School Hockey League.
Yep. If Westwood lost that game, if Collège Jean Sauvé won, then Oak Park would have been eliminated from the playoffs. And Westwood and Collège Jean Sauvé would have gone forward into the semifinals of the playoff league. Westwood was leading that game late in the third period when they decided to pull their goalie and pretty much give the win to Collège Jean Sauvé, so both of those teams would go through to the next round and Oak Park would be eliminated.
Right.
Prior to the show, we had a serious conversation, a good discussion between the three of us about your thoughts about the ethics of this. Were the Westwood coaches right in doing this? From our perspective, from what we can understand, Westwood said, "We can't beat Oak Park. We can't beat Oak Park.
We have a better chance.
We have a better chance of beating Collège Jean Sauvé. So let's throw the game, the last 10 minutes of the game, let's throw it or whatever.
Right.
That way we'll go through to the semifinals. Collège Jean Sauvé will go through to the semifinals. We'll play them again, and the winner will get to go to the finals, whereas we don't think we can beat Oak Park."
And?
And then, Drew, what happened yesterday?
And so the Winnipeg High School Hockey League got involved. They said, no, this is obviously against the letter of the root law or whatever. Collège Jean Sauvé, you did nothing wrong. You get to go through to the semifinals. Westwood and Oak Park, you guys get to play a bonus game with the winner of that bonus game going through to play Collège Jean Sauvé. Westwood lost to Oak Park, I believe 3-1 was 4-1. The final.
Yep.
4-1 was the score.
And the coach wasn't allowed to coach.
And the coaches had been removed from the game, and the principal of the school ended up coaching. Boys, you both coach hockey. Richard, you had a strong opinion on it. Why don't you give us your thoughts
Richie's
on it?
Richie's HC. I'm only AC.
And
head coach, assistant coach.
Of course, we also want to hear from you on this issue. 780-1290 about your thoughts about what the coaches of the Westwood team did. Is it fair? Is it not? Your thoughts on that?
I have no issue with what he did at all. I mean, and I know he's getting vilified right now in the media for the decisions he's made, but let's be real here, guys. I mean, he threw a game, quote-unquote. If you want to control, I mean, he didn't throw himself out of the playoffs. He was trying to control the matchup that he wanted, and the coach clearly thought the team couldn't beat Oak Park, which he was correct about because they couldn't beat Oak Park, who's clearly a better team, apparently. So, you know, they lose 4-1. I don't understand what the issue is here. It's high school. It's not, you're not talking Adam age. You're talking high school. These kids are 16, 17, 18. The coach, you know, he's going to play players based on ice time, power play, penalty kill. They're almost men. They can handle it. What's the issue here? He was making a decision. They talk about, in the spirit of the game. The players on the team at the end of the day want to win. We're not talking about 7-year-olds. They want to win. They're going to remember if they won the championship, not if they threw a game to win the championship. They're going to remember that they won the championship. Why is he getting vilified? What is wrong with this?
Richie, well, first of all, I think that this, what the two Westwood coaches did is going to be a polarizing issue. I think...
Well, certainly already proving to be correct.
I think that what they did was wrong, and we were talking about this before we went on air, and you know, if we were going to devote a segment to this, And
I think
basically what I told Richard is me and Richard are coaching right now bantam level.
Yeah.
And I would have a lot of problem, many problems with throwing a game. I would personally not want to ever do this. And I think that the reason why this is wrong, and this is wrong at any level, is because you should never purposely try to lose a game in any sport.
I have two questions for you guys.
Unless you're gambling, I don't care.
I have two questions for you guys. A, do you think that part of the problem was how blatant the coaches decided to do it by pulling the goalie?
Basically, they should have scored on their own net.
I'd rather him be blatant like that as opposed to like telling the kids to quit.
Or tell your star player to sit out.
Clearly, Drew, he wanted to get a read. Obviously, maybe I'm not clearly, but I'm assuming. I don't know enough about high school hockey in the city, but I'm assuming he wanted to get a read on how they played against College Hockey Survey before making that decision.
That's fair. 780-1290 to talk about what the coaches did in this instance. That's 780-1290. If you're calling from out of town, 204-780-1290. Another point to this one. Is this any different than say what the Indianapolis Colts do? On a regular basis, you know, by sitting their players right before the playoffs start?
No, it's different. It's different. You're not... Let's stick to the issue, Drew. I don't think it is, because you're not throwing a game. You're not dressing your best players. I think it's different. This is...
Why? But the Indianapolis Colts, they dress them. They play a half of football. They have a 14-point lead, and then they play their backups.
Hey, let me throw this out there. If a player purposely scored on his own net, would that make it any better or worse? I think it wouldn't matter. I think it's the same thing. When you pull a goalie, you're basically saying, here, shoot the puck into the net. We don't want to win. You might as well just do this. It completely is unsportsmanlike.
The guy wants to win the championship. Who cares?
But how do you want to win the championship if you're trying to purposely lose?
Because to purposely losing to make it an easier road for you to win the championship. What's wrong with that?
But Richie, they're out now. They're out, so they obviously...
Yeah, they're because there's
uproar and because people complain about it because they're higher sense of self than the coach. Well, who are they to tell him how to coach?
How about the fact, do you believe that the players were upset by the coach's decision?
I don't know if the players were or not. I don't know. I'm not close enough to the situation. I'm just saying from the coach's perspective, I don't have an issue with it. Look what happened. They lost.
So you're saying
now, that... obviously there's distractions play a factor now against Oak Park, but even so, clearly he didn't think he was as good as Oak Park, and Oak Park showed him. They're better.
At what age is this appropriate versus inappropriate?
Well, that's the thing. I said about 12 or 11 or 13, you're going to get an age where the kids are a little bit older and a little bit more able to deal with situations like this. But I don't understand why he's getting so vilified.
I think that this is a big ethical debate, and I mean, this is going to be, hopefully this is something that, you know, is going to be talked about in the Winnipeg High School Athletic Association, because really, this is there's no reason why this can't happen again in other sports, because it's a strategy. It's and it's crossing a line where it's a gray area of ethics, and obviously, these coaches made a decision that they wanted to face a certain opponent, and they were purposely going to lose the game to play that certain opponent.
Nothing wrong with that.
At first, I had a problem with it, just sort of without delving deep into it. But now that I really listen to your argument on this, it isn't anything different than anything that goes on in professional sports. The question I have is, at what point, at what level is it appropriate versus inappropriate?
They're not throwing a season, Drew. He's trying to win. The end game is trying to win.
He's still trying to win a championship.
Yeah, that's the end game. I mean, I don't understand this. He's not trying to throw the... He didn't bet on the game. He's not trying to throw the game. He's not trying to throw the game to get a better draft pick, because there's not draft picks in high school hockey. But in all honesty, though...
It doesn't ring that sour to me at this point. You know, after reconsidering it and looking at
he's
how...
getting absolutely... I mean, everybody's got... You look at the comments on the Free Press website. He's getting torn apart.
Well, I can't, with all due respect to the commentators on the Free Press website, you can't really take them
but once
at
again,
face
that's,
value.
That's,
fair
the,
enough.
That's a reflection of public opinion, and there are people True. That are supporting, that think like Richie, and there's people that think like me.
More so think like you.
And then there's people that are in between. I mean, I think that this is something that is reflective of maybe people's willingness to win at any cost.
You know what, Ezzy, I understand. I mean, if they're 7 years old and you're doing this, okay. I mean, just play the games and just have fun. You're playing high school hockey. You're playing to win. It's competitive.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
again, will the kids remember, 10 years from now, the kids are going to look back and fondly and say, at least we played Oak Park and we lost. Or would they be better off looking back and saying, hey, we won the championship? That's all they would remember.
Or they lost in the finals of the championship as opposed to never getting even past the quarterfinals into the semifinal.
That's right.
Round.
Richie, I agree with you as far as I agree with you as far as playing to win, but I would say if you really, if that's really the mantra and that's really what you should live by, then don't ever purposely try to lose then.
But you're playing to win, and if that, if losing within the scheme of things is it helps you win, then what's wrong with that?
It'd be interesting to hear from the coaches at this point.
I think he's actually quite a creative coach. I think, you know, there's a part of the culture of hockey that you're admitting that you can't beat a team. But at the end of the day, if it helps you win overall, I think he's actually being tactically correct. I like that he has some, you know, he's got the nerve to do something like this.
Let's just hope that
you
guys, you don't
you guys
have
coach 14-year-olds.
Let's just hope we don't have to do that on Monday.
Let's wrap this. You guys coach 14-year-olds. Would you do the same?
Never, context dependent,
never,
Drew.
Would
I do that with our 14-year-old team?
Yeah.
No, because I feel like the matchups for us, you know,
you could beat any team
are close. Yeah, we could beat or lose, but I think we have a chance. You know, if there's a team I didn't think I had a chance against, I don't know.
But once again, Drew, Richie is head coach and I'm assistant coach.
But at 14,
that's why I'm asking Richie, not you.
At 14, Drew, I would hesitate. But when you get to high school hockey, it's a different story.
So you think that there's a level, you reach a level that is competitiveness that
we're not playing power play and penalty kill and rolling at the top scores all the time. We're playing.
Well, you made
fun.
A point. You said in high school hockey, you know, they shorten a bench when necessary. They double shift. You know, they have lines as opposed to just everybody gets to play for the love of the game.
That's right.
I mean, when you think about it that way, I think it's a relevant point you make.
Honestly, boys, I think this is something that we should talk about in the future, because I think this is something that, you know, needs to be explored. This is something that's healthy. It's a healthy debate, but you know.
Well, maybe we'll revisit later on in the show. We can see if we can get some calls on that 780-1290. Let's go to break. When we come back, I just saw a shadow walk past us. Gary Lawless from Hustler and Lawless in the Winnipeg Free Press.
Lawless is here
to join us in studio. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:15 in the morning. We're going to be taking your calls on the high school hockey controversy, 780-1290. That's 780-1290. If you're calling from out of town, put a 204 in front of that. We're pleased to be joined in studio now by our new colleague, Gary Lawless from Hustler and Lawless in the Winnipeg Free Press. Welcome to the program, Gary.
There you go. I've got to tell you, I was just listening to your last segment on the way over. Whoever was arguing that it was, you know, the players want to win and the coach just wanted to win, that's garbage, okay?
That's
this
Richard.
High school hockey, Richard.
Okay.
It's not Mike Keenan and the New York Rangers. This is, you're just trying to mold young men at this point in time, and the message you're sending them is win at all costs. Lay down if that's what it takes to get over the top. Terrible message for young men. You say they're almost men. I agree with that. Let's make them good men and not schmucks.
See, you know, I honestly think as a kid that age, or almost man that age, is that in the end of the day, you really all you do want to win. I think you're more competitive at that age than you probably are 5 years down the road.
Walk away from this experience in high school hockey knowing that you put the screws to another group of kids that worked just as hard as you and practiced all year to get to that point because you knew you couldn't beat them. So you tried to find another way to contravene the playoff tournament. Sorry, it doesn't work.
I understand that idea in terms of the coach sending the message to the team. But at the end of the day, if they want to win, I think if they win at all, they don't remember avoiding Oak Park 5 years down the road.
Yeah, I doubt it.
We have Jerry on the line, I believe. Let's go to Jerry. We'll come back, and I have a point I want to make on this. Jerry, you're on the line about the high school hockey controversy. Welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi, how you doing? What's your point? What do you think about this issue there, Jerry?
I've been involved with Winnipeg Minor Hockey for 35 years. And I want to tell you, I don't believe that anybody should be allowed to pull that kind of a stunt, because that's not teaching the kids any respect for other teams, not teaching the kids any respect for themselves. If the coaches are allowed to pull that kind of a stunt, I don't think they should be allowed to coach minor hockey or any type of hockey. I don't care if it's high school or whatever, for the rest of their lives. They should be condoned for that.
You guys are probably too young to remember. In the Memorial Cup, I'm saying 79 or 80, Mike Keenan was coaching the Peterborough Petes. They were playing the tournament in Regina, and in order to avoid the Cornwall Royals, which were led by Dale Howard, Chuck Scott O'Neill, they laid down, or they threw a game, it backfired, and they ended up, they lost, the Petes lost the game in the final. But there was almost rioting in Regina. Keenan was lucky to get out of there alive. He put those players in a terrible position. And at the end of the day, that's kind of what this sticks with me is this coach, and I don't know his name on it because I haven't followed the story that closely, but you know, you did say you don't know how the kids feel. Adam Wozni's piece in the Free Press this morning, the captain of the Westwood team says, I feel terrible about this. This is not the way I wanted this to go down, not the way I wanted to carry myself out. You know, this coach made this decision and put the rest of those kids in that, put those kids in that position where we're talking about this right now. And some people could misconstrue this and put the heat on those young players. I think that's unfair.
I don't think you can put the heat on the young players.
Some people could.
People can do anything.
I say.
You know what I don't understand?
What's that, Jerry?
I heard one parent from that team voice their opinion about this. Because you know what? Those kids have parents, too. They pay for that program.
Yeah,
you pay for a program, you should get full benefit of the program. Not to, well, let's throw a game and see if we can win a championship. That's garbage.
But doesn't that say something about the age of the about the kids, that the parents aren't getting involved because clearly they think the kids can speak for themselves?
To some extent, I agree with Richard. Jerry, thanks very much for the call.
I got one more thing.
Sure. Quickly, Jerry.
Real quick, I want you to bring this up. The Winnipeg Jets return to Winnipeg. If you remember, Gary Bettman said on NHL Hockey Saturday Night Live about 5 months ago, if this deal isn't done by the end of December, it's done.
Yeah,
I want to know
what
why
he said
Bettman
at all.
Isn't
it's not what he said at all,
work.
Jerry. Gary Bettman said in a legal document, he said, if we can't close a sale in the city of Glendale, the NHL will be, at that point, will be in position to explore other options. Two completely different things.
It's an arbitrary deadline more than anything. Here's another point. I think we have Greg on the line, but before we go to Greg, here's my question for you. And Gary,
it's actually not an arbitrary deadline. It's what they had in the lease agreement to get that $25 million. After December 31st, we can then explore our options.
Right, exactly. But it doesn't mean we have to explore our options.
Well, they had a sale ongoing. They want to keep the team, no matter what Gary Bettman says, and he has said this, they want to keep the team in Phoenix.
Of course. He's staked too much of his personal stake to just up and leave at this point.
Yeah,
but let me ask you a quick question here,
sure.
Gary. You came at Richard pretty hard there, and that's good. But if, you know, it's about the kids and the love of the game, and you want to build young men and everything like that, what about the fact that coaches, you know, frequently in high school athletics and in youth athletics of all sorts, shorten the bench? They don't play certain kids during certain circumstances of the game.
Are you compare shortening the bench to throwing a game?
I'm not saying, but how about if he had benched his best players? If he had benched his best players for the third period
just
of the game.
Just as bad, but it wouldn't be, the optics, we wouldn't be talking about because we wouldn't know.
You can
steal, but until you're caught, people aren't going to talk about it.
To me, the thing is at the end of the day, he didn't do anything that was not within
the rules.
Exactly.
Right. No.
And I mean, court of public
Roger
opinion.
Roger Wilson might have applauded him.
Yeah.
You know, he was innovative and was always trying to do different
things.
That's
what I mean. I
doubt it.
probably doubt it, but there's creativity there, and there's a risk.
Are
obviously,
you just a garden gnome? Do you talk? What's going on here?
No, I mean,
get in the game, man.
Well, Ed, you're with Gary on this one.
No. But I mean, the thing with this isn't a question of it's not a rule breaker, but this is a question of sports ethics, and really, you know,
Bill
me and Richard,
Clinton
me and
didn't
Richard
have sex
Richard
with Monica Lewinsky.
He also didn't inhale.
All right. Like, it's the same thing here, guys. They did something wrong. They didn't break the rules. They did something wrong.
That's right.
But
I'm not sure they did anything wrong.
I've convinced
really
you, Adrian.
Not.
I've convinced you.
You've convinced me. You know,
this morning at Drew, at the coffee shop, Drew was giving me the gears.
I was not giving you the gears. I was willing to hear your point, and I actually have come aboard your side. You articulate, you know, for a lawyer, you can articulate yourself pretty well.
Well, guys, there's four of us with mics right now, and I think me and Gary in a battle royale would fare pretty well. So.
I think we have Greg on the line who wants to get in on this conversation. Greg, are you there? Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi, guys. It sounds pretty heated where you are. I'm an educator.
Okay.
I've coached high school athletics, high school basketball. I have a tough time with this being in the educational world, because part of my responsibility as a coach is teach my kids how to lose properly.
That's right, Greg.
And we're going to give it 110%, and at the end of the day, we might lose. And it's at that point where myself as a coach, that's when I'm most important to my kids, is how they deal with that adversity. Because the old saying says, winning doesn't, or losing doesn't build character, it exposes character.
Sure, okay.
And it exposes my character as a coach. And I think that's what really polarized it for me, and that's why I think it's in this forum. It's an educational experience.
This is one of the things I like. Sometimes the rules of golf really grate me.
Yeah, yeah.
But they have perpetuated and kept alive the spirit of the rule book, so that, you know, if you're in the woods alone and no one can see you and you're not allowed to ground your club, you don't ground your club. Okay, that's the way golf is played, real golf.
Yeah.
And to me, this is just, you know, the spirit of the game was completely violated in this case, and I feel terrible for the players, those Westwood kids, and I hope the coach learned a lesson and comes back to be a better coach.
You know, it's hard to say what the players think. So that, you know, I mean,
there's a quote in the newspaper.
I know,
The captain.
It's hard to think what they thought at the exact moment, though, when they were strategically playing it out. After the fact, there's a hullabaloo and there's noise about
it.
So their quotes might change dramatically.
They don't have a choice. The coach makes the decisions. The coach goes like this, you know. The goalie comes off the ice.
The coach must have made that decision beforehand, though, right?
You would think so. The coach, the coach would, before the game, probably would have sat back and said, look, I mean, if this is what's happening and we're in this circumstance, we can get rid of Oak Park and we can move forward and beat these guys again.
You think the players that?
Well, that's a good question, Gary. Yeah. And that's what I'm wondering.
And I think if the coach
anyways, even if he did talk, he wouldn't tell anybody that.
No. If he did it unilaterally, I think it's a problem, and he probably should have consulted with his players first. Greg, we appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
Thanks, fellas.
Yeah.
But whether or not you know he consulted parents or the players or whatever, the fact is now they're out of the playoffs, and now the season is only going to be viewed one way, and that's going to be that it's tarnished. Now they're going to think of the season as we purposely lost a game and it didn't really help us.
You're
and it's
right.
Just, it's controversial.
You don't operate in a vacuum, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? So
780-1290.
And defending him and the reasoning behind it. I'm not saying as a coach.
You are a lawyer, eh?
Yeah,
apparently.
Scarf, he's like an Oxford debater.
We call him corporate indie. Can you see that? Corporate indie there with the scarf and everything else?
Are you a Sox fan, Gary?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, you could be a dead ringer for David Thompson. You know that, eh?
For David Thompson?
Yeah, you really could.
Without the money.
He's got the lanky hair. He's got the. You look a lot like him.
Guys, we have before we quickly go to break, we have Zach on the line calling from Toronto on this issue. Zach, welcome to the program.
Go Leafs!
Hey now, guys.
Hey now, Zach. Thanks for joining us. What's your take? You're calling from the the fake nation's capital. What do you say about this issue?
Well, here's the thing. You know, with all due respect to coaches, you know, Richie and Ezzy, you guys coach, you guys put a lot into work into it. I understand that.
Yep.
But ultimately, you know, in this situation, this is the coaches writing a check that the kids have to cash.
Exactly.
You know?
Yep.
They're on the ice. They weren't going out there.
That's their last memory of high school hockey.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's a bad one.
And, like, at some point...
But if nobody gets involved, their last memory of high school hockey may be winning the championship.
That's the point. I think
you don't operate in a vacuum.
But you have to consider the big picture here, though.
I'm doing something shady. I'm probably going to get called out for this. And as a result, these kids pay the price.
But I'm curious.
What happened.
How did this become an issue? Who contacted who? How did this become an issue? If I'm a player on that team, I'm probably not that upset if it doesn't become an issue.
Probably
I'm in the semifinals.
Oak Park, who was there watching the game or scouting the game.
Oak Park should have taken care of their business. He got replaced on principle.
I won't disagree with that. However, you expect teams to go out and try and win
every
game.
If he had called up his...
That's sport.
But
go
if they
and try and win.
You're the Indianapolis Colts.
The New York Giants, you guys talked about the NFL.
Yeah.
The New York Giants didn't lay down
and
against
they ended
the
up
Pats in that game.
Yeah,
and as a result, they put the seed in their minds. We meet these guys again, we're going to beat them.
And
they got $100,000 rings on their fingers.
And in that instance, it worked out. But do you have a problem with what the Indianapolis Colts do by resting their starters in the second half?
Yeah, look what happened to them. They lost. They didn't win the Super Bowl.
But
they didn't have any momentum.
I don't think you could say there's a correlation between
I was at the game. They got to the game. They weren't ready to play. They laid down. They
won two games before.
They
won two games before that. What happens if Peyton Manning gets injured in the third quarter of a meaningless game?
They weren't tournament tough. And when the pressure really got to them, they folded. You play to win all the time.
Zach, thanks for the call. We got to go to break. We'll take more calls on this after the commercial messages.
Best debate ever.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.